Hey everybody, it's time for Indie Film Cafe. So, welcome. And we have here...
Jonathan Moody, known as the Blu-ray Hunter.
And then there's me, known as the Moo Cow. And we have as our guest today...
Just Jen.
Yay! And we also have...
Lenore Miller.
And...
Yolanda Miller.
Woohoo! And we have Lady, and we have Continuity Monkey... And Space Monkey, and we have a completely full house.
Here. And the cow.
And the cow.
Food.
Well, the cow doesn't have a name yet, does it?
It's okay. It's the unnamed Film Freaks cow.
It's the Film Freaks cow.
Name's Todd.
There we go.
Okay, now he has a name. Todd.
All right.
Todd the cow.
I love it.
Nice. So, we have gathered here together to watch a movie. And this is one that I've been kind of waiting to show Just Jen.
Thank you.
Because you know I always save the great movies for you.
Well, you save yeah.
But this one is actually, I'm not even 100% sure it's considered an independent film. Because it was put out by MGM. But this is a movie called Vampire's Kiss with Nicolas Cage. And this is just absolutely batshit, wackadoodle, bonkers, insane, crazy performance. So,
explain to the audience that you saved this for Just Jen.
So I did.
I don't know why. Was there a particular reason you picked this movie?
Just because I think she's going to enjoy Nick Cage's performance.
Okay, I brought cookies.
Laugh at.
All right, so. What we're going to do is we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back after we hear that mood music. Okay, we are back after the Vampire's Kiss. So, what did you guys think?
I will say this, it was a movie.
It was a movie. It did fit the definition of a movie.
There was
a plot, there were actors, and things happened.
It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Probably one of the weirdest. What
can't be the weirdest.
Where was Magic Lizard?
Weirdest on Indie Film Cafe that you know, Jen?
I still would not classify it as the weirdest. Now, the weirdest being from like a major movie label, yes.
MGM.
Well, they're the ones who just distributed it. They didn't make it. Fine. Magellan Pictures who made it. Now, I don't know who Magellan Pictures is. I've never heard of them.
They're probably an independent company, so it fits.
Yeah, so there you go.
Technicalities.
But this was, you know, 1989. The 88 is when it was made, released in 1989. I can tell you it had a $2 million budget, and the box office was $725,000. So it did not make its money back. And I can tell you, I saw it in the theaters, and this was not in any way, shape, or form marketed as a black comedy as it is now. That's a bit of revisionist advertising, in my opinion. I think when this movie came out, they had no freaking clue how to advertise this. They had no idea what... This is like a chimera. It has like a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and nobody really knew what to do with it.
Because it's not like a horror film, you know, but it would sound like one, right? Like Vampire's Kiss. You would think that, but it's not a horror film, and it's not a comedy, though it has comedy, you know?
Laughed. I don't know if it's intentional or not.
And I don't know, like... Is it a, I don't know, what would you classify it as?
I think it was supposed to be like a psychological thriller.
Could be.
Ooh, that's a good
one. I would like
to
say maybe a tragedy. Poor Alvy.
I know. It's just, you know, okay, so let me, a little background on this. Towards the end of the 80s, remember, we had a spate of vampire movies. So we had The Lost Boys, we had, The Fright Night.
Right, okay. And then there was another one.
We had, what was the other big one? Near Dark.
Near Dark, that's
right.
What I was thinking of.
Right, which we're going to do on Film Freaks, because that's a great film. And all of these films, if you think about it, sort of expounded on vampires and what is commonly thought of in vampires. Remember, we had the big thing in the, with the Universal movies back in the 30s, and then it kind of went away after Bela Lugosi and that whole crew sort of stopped doing it. And then it got reinvented again in the 50s with the Hammer movies, mm-hmm. right? And then again, by the time the 70s, that went away. So here comes the 80s, towards the end of the 80s, and we get all these vampire things going again. But they're all kind of different, where they're sort of doing different takes on it. I think this was yet another attempt to do a different take on a vampire movie, except I think by then, I think people were either tired of it or something. It was just the market was saturated of it. And so I guess these guys felt they had to do something even more different mm-hmm. and radical. And honestly,
and they did.
And the thing is, you're never really quite sure if the vampire actually ever existed or not. For all we know, Peter Lowe might have been nutso from the very, very beginning.
I will say that, no, we do know because we see the chick in the club that he keeps seeing or whatever, Rachel, mm-hmm. you know, so we know, at the end, they do show that he is nuts. He's talking to his therapist himself. He's, as far as we know, he's never actually gone to a therapist. So there's just a lot of as Jen said, it's a psychological thriller kind of thing where you don't know what is going on,
right.
You know, half the time.
Well, that's just it, is that if that's the case, then it sort of plunges you into this world without any kind of background, except a little bitty bits here and there that you're not really sure what's going on. It's kind of tough. I mean, it's really hard to approach this film.
It's mm-hmm. like they kind of try and trick you at first into thinking he's the protagonist, and then as you keep going, it's like, no, he's actually...
And he is such a jerk and so weird and so crazy, and yet, in the end, I can't help but feel a little bit sorry for him because he's nuts.
Shouldn't... If a literary agency makes a copy of every contract... of every single contract it makes with a client, and then puts it in a file, in the appropriate file. Shouldn't the copy be in that file?
Yes, I suppose it should.
It should, right?
Yes.
Right? Yep.
Unless, of course, it's somehow been misfiled.
Misfiled?
Yes, misfiled. Sometimes somebody puts a document in the wrong file, and then it's misfiled. It makes it much harder to find.
Who? What do you mean, who?
I don't know who exactly.
You don't?
No, I don't. Whoever filed it in the first place, but... For God's sakes, Peter, I am not telling you one single thing you don't already know.
How could somebody misfile something? What could be easier? It's all alphabetical. You just put it in the right file, according to alphabetical order. You know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G,
Peter.
H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P,
Peter.
Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z! Huh? That's all you have to do!
Very good. You know your alphabet.
I never misfiled anything! Not once, not one time!
I'm sure that you didn't.
I want to know, really, who did?
I cannot possibly tell you that.
You can't?
No, I can't.
Ha! You call yourself a psychiatrist.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. I don't feel sorry for him because, I don't know, he's like a dick. Like, I don't care if
sure,
he's nuts, but he's
but,
a dick.
I mean, you know, you can't really hold insane people in the same level of responsibility as you do with regular people because they're not in control of themselves.
They are if they take medication.
I don't think he's taking medication. He's eating pigeons, for Christ's sake.
I know. I'm just saying, if he took medication, he would be, you know, I'm just saying he's... We can't say, oh, because he doesn't take medication, he's not taking care of himself, that we should feel sorry for him.
We don't know what medication he is or is not taking. We don't know if he's ever been addressed medically or not. But I don't know. I guess for the moment, let's kind of focus on one bit at a time. Talk about the cast. So this is a Nicolas Cage movie. And I'm telling you what, guys. You will never see a movie completely dominated by an actor's performance like this. This was just, I mean, I don't even, all the other people barely register. You're just, your eyes are focused on Nicolas Cage and what the hell he's going to do next.
And New York City.
Yeah, right. And definitely there. So Nicolas Cage and then Maria Conchita Alonso is in it, Jennifer Beals and Elizabeth Ashley are the four big names there. Maria Conchita Alonso plays Alva, who's the poor, suffering secretary.
Oh, poor Alva.
Jennifer Beals plays a character who may or may not be there, the would-be vampire. And then Elizabeth Ashley plays the psychiatrist, who also may or may not be there. It's hard to tell who is real and who is a figment of his imagination.
Well, we know the one lady exists. He confronts her in the club, but she's not.
The one that he kills?
Yeah, Rachel.
Rachel, the vampire. We know that she exists as a person, but...
And you know Alva exists as a person.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty sure, so... Like, the only person... I mean, you can't tell, you know, if... Because you know that the vampire, when he's... talking to the people by them, and then all of a sudden they cut and you see that he's just talking to himself. You know that's when he's talking to imaginary people.
Right.
You know, but I don't know. All the people
but I has think he been exist. Doing this all along? That's the thing.
That's a good point.
That's, I mean, it could, I guess. I mean, that's, I guess it's led up to interpretation in that sense.
And you know, and it's funny. I went back and I looked at the reviews of this film, and it is very generational. You know, for us... you know, Gen X folks, when this first came out in the late 80s, early 90s, most of the reviewers are like, what the hell is this? Who let Nicolas Cage go nuts? And this is just terrible.
Yeah.
And then everything I've read, say from 2000 on up, has said, this is a really cool movie. This is, you know, sort of explaining, you know, a deconstruction of the vampires and all this other kind of stuff. I'm like, I don't know.
I can kind of see it.
It's very strange. It's like the younger folks just seem to sort of accept it for what it is, whereas some of the older folks were like, this is ridiculous.
It's also that.
Right.
Well, it shows like, yeah, the generation, you know, like right now we live in an age where people are fascinated by weird, stupid shit. And you were fascinated from it from the very beginning.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
You almost don't even fit in with those Gen X people who are like, what the
exactly.
fuck?
Exactly. You know, I've loved this movie for a long time because you're not going to see anything else like this. It's just such a crazy, batshit nut movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it does it in a way that's actually fun. And of course, like I said, the real reason you watch this movie is to see Nicolas Cage chew scenery like nobody's business. Oh, my goodness.
He's jumping on tables. He's, you know, doing crazy shit.
Okay.
Just
jumping
over desks, chasing people in the hall.
I guess we should take a moment and kind of go briefly over the plot. So the movie opens up with Nicolas Cage playing Peter Lowe, who is a literary agent working for this prestigious firm. Where?
New York City.
And how do you know?
Because they spend 15 minutes in the beginning showing us pictures of it. And then another 15 minutes later on showing us more pictures of it.
And throughout the whole movie, you see pictures of New York
City. Yes, there were many establishing shots that we are
in New York
City. I think
they were trying to build up suspense in the beginning, but I wasn't suspense.
Yeah, there's no suspense given.
So anyway, we have established that they are in New York City, and he's picked up some chick that I guess is a girlfriend, because we see her again several times, and... Mm. He kind of treats her, you know, like crap. You see
kind
him
of?
Going to his therapist and sort of talking about stuff. And then we see him at work where he is just browbeating this poor secretary, Alva, every chance he gets.
Alva. 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 Alva! 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 Alva!
There you are!
We don't know why. Mm. And he just seems to be losing track of reality. Then he picks up this new chick at a club.
For like a night, yeah.
Who, you know, oh yeah, let's not forget the wonderful thing is during the first one, the bat flies into his apartment. Which you gotta wonder if this is the catalyst for the whole psychotic episode with this guy.
Well, you know, that's what I thought. Like close to the end of the movie and we see him again in his apartment and the windows open still and everything. And I think you even said something about like maybe, or we said something, somebody said something about the fact that there might be the bat still in there or whatever, you know, and stuff like that, or he could fly back in. The whole idea is, I think, that he saw the bat, he thought of vampires then, and then later he saw the woman, you know, like the imaginary woman or whatever, who's a real person, but not at that particular time, wasn't real. And then he, you know, he got bit by her, because later we see the same scene, he get bit again by her, you know, right, what I mean? So right. It's just like, I think it's that bat he saw in the beginning, well, he just kind of put two and two together.
Yeah, she also could have been into a little kinkier sex and bit him. But in his mind, he put the bat and her together, so she's got to be a vampire.
And it's so funny because, you know, he's talking to his therapist, who may or may not exist, and he's saying, I was in mortal combat with the bat, for God's sakes. And he's just got this weird accent going on.
You knew. You know a lot. Like, oh, my God.
So he's doing this, and, yes, he picks up this new woman. It turns out to be Jennifer Beals. Who may have not have been this Rachel person originally, but by the time we see her go back to Peter's place, she's actually a vampire and she starts snacking on him. And all of a sudden, he starts to decide that he's a vampire and it just slowly unravels while he's still tormenting poor Alva.
Alva, there is no one else in this entire office that I could possibly ask to share such a horrible job. You're the lowest on the totem pole here, Alva. The lowest. Do you realize that? Every other secretary who's been here has been here longer than you, Alva. Everyone. And even if there was someone here who was here just one day longer than you, I still wouldn't ask that person to partake in such a miserable job as long as you were around. That's right, Alva. It's a horrible, horrible job. Sifting through old contract after old contract. I couldn't think of a more horrible job if I wanted to. And you have to do it. You have to, or I'll fire you. Do you understand? Do you?
And he just goes more and more and more nuts until the point where he's decided that he is a vampire, even though he doesn't have teeth. He can't wait for them to come in, so he goes out and he buys plastic teeth and the cheapest ones he can get because he's got no more money anymore because he's not going to work. And then he's running around the streets just being a menace, a weird menace to everyone.
I'm a vampire! And then he kills and eats a live pigeon.
Yes, he kills and eats a live pigeon.
Even before then, he kills, even before or after, I'm not sure which one, but he killed a woman in the, in the club. I think
it's club, this roach pigeon person.
Yes, his vampire thing has escalated.
Escalated.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
And so by the end, he's assaulted Alva, and she has told her brother about it, and he tracks him down, finds him in his destroyed apartment, and finally puts him out of his misery by shoving a stake through him like you would a normal vampire. And
he was helping him because he wanted to kill himself because he thought he was going to die from the which doesn't make any sense, because like, why didn't you just die from the sunlight? And
right.
If you're going to commit suicide, why put the stake through your heart? But he did it so that the guy saw him and actually sticks it in him.
In his psychotic episode, remember, he had Alva shoot at him. And then he took the gun and started shooting himself in the mouth. And it didn't work. And then he did those wonderful lines. Boo-hoo! Boo-hoo!
Yeah.
is so yeah. strange.
Wonderful is what I would call it.
I think maybe on some level he knew he was going insane, so he wanted to die. But also, I'm glad the character died because he's insane.
See, I have a different theory because he seemed sane enough at the beginning. I think what happened is that the bat did bite him and then he got rabies.
Oh, right. Core trait of rabies is that you can no longer drink water and then you die from dehydration.
Eek. Not necessarily. I found this list of symptoms. The first here we go. So,
come on, scientist Lenore.
The first symptoms to develop are a fever and headache, a general feeling of anxiety or just feeling unwell, and in some cases, discomfort at the sight of the bite, which,
So you think... So that could fit, I guess, with anxiety especially.
Yeah, maybe the bat gave him rabies. Maybe he gave rabies to the bat.
Later symptoms are confusion, aggressive behavior, hallucinations, producing a lot of saliva and frothing at the mouth, which would explain how he could wear those pangs for so long, without going nuts, muscle spasms, difficulty swallowing, difficulty breathing, which would explain why his mouth keeps falling open, paralysis, which explains why he acts so stiff in so many scenes.
Mm. Okay, I could see this, maybe.
And it's usually fatal.
Well, yeah, it's fatal because eventually you get lockjaw and you can't drink water because you're also terrified of the water.
Hmm. Okay, well, it is certainly possible that maybe he was suffering from rabies.
Yeah, and if he was already... Let's assume that he actually was seeing a psychiatrist, then that would...
Everybody, yeah. I think we're giving this movie way too much credit.
we're giving it too much credit?
I'm just, what I say. I didn't bring up the rabies, and stuff. So I think this movie is, I think this movie is just crazy.
Well, here's the thing. The director, was it Robert Bierman? He hasn't really done much. He did a few things on TV. I know he did a few episodes of Walking Dead, and he directed a few other things. I think this was either his first or second feature movie, and I don't know that he ever did much beyond that, so he's kind of like an inexperienced director, and here comes Nicolas Cage, who's already kind of like a massive ego sort of guy. I can't imagine him saying, okay, I'm just going to let you do whatever you're going to do. Because I've seen a lot of critics the director allowed him to sort of overindulge in his theatrical performance, but
Cage,
right now, okay. Nicolas Cage, I've seen interviews where he's talked about how he wanted to base his performance in this film on the character in Beauty and the Beast from the 1940s, the French film that I was talking about.
Which was Jean-Pierre.
Right, I understand that's like a big performance, but nothing like this.
Oh yeah.
So you got to wonder if a more experienced director would have reined him in some kind of way, or whether the director just said, "Knock yourself out, go as nuts as you want to be."
This kind of reminds me a little bit of like the the Island of Dr. Moreau. And how crazy that set was, or whatever, yes. And how over the top all the characters were because they were kind of not reined in a lot.
Right. Whatever. Well, they lost their primary director, and the guy that came in didn't really like it, and didn't like him. And
Marlon Brando
hated him, and Marlon Brando decided he was going to undercut the movie at every step he could, and he did. Like that weird, stupid hat that he made him, the ice bucket on his head.
He wanted the movie to stop, so he actually told somebody to go. And find, peacock feathers.
Right.
Or whatever. And they didn't actually think, he sent them on a fool's errand, and they came back with peacock feathers.
Right,
and put it in a hat, and he had to wear it.
Right. Marlon Brando was trolling the director the entire time, and it's just so funny.
Oh, poor guy.
I don't think that's a situation that was happening here, but it's similar. It could have been very similar. It's just bizarre. And like I said, you will never see a movie so completely dominated by an actor's performance. The film in and of itself is pretty well made. I mean, it looked very professional. The lighting was great. The sound was good.
Like, you would think this is a real good movie.
Right.
Until you saw Nicolas Cage's performance.
You don't even pay attention to that because, like I said, you're transfixed saying, what the hell crazy shit is he going to do next?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unlike like some other movies I have seen in this genre, I guess you could say, you're not distracted by the bad cinematography, and you're not distracted by the plot, in as much, you know, as like where the plot doesn't make sense. It has a plot, it has good cinematography, it just is bizarre.
Right, and it's not helping the audience. It's not gonna spoon feed you what's going on. You kinda gotta figure it out for yourself, and you either get it or you don't. Now, there are certain elements in there that I wonder about. Like, I wonder why it's there, and I can see how it's throwing people off. Like, the whole thing with the mimes, that was really weird. I don't understand. Is that just what happened? I don't remember that just random mimes in New York City just slapping and spitting on each other.
I think that's like just like the image people have of New York.
Just very strange. So I didn't quite get that. So, you know, that's part of one of the reasons why I have to question exactly what it is we're seeing, because there are different points where the movie is kind of undermining its own reality.
Yeah.
You know?
I think they're doing that deliberately.
And the same thing with, like, you know, the tone of the movie. You know, there are some people who said that this is, like, you know, that there are comedic elements, except the fact that Peter is such a shitbird to poor Alva, that really undercuts a lot of the humor in it, because that's not funny.
Yeah. Especially when they go on. They go in that meeting with all the men.
Right.
Yeah, that was not funny.
Right, and certainly that was sort of a mark of the times back then. Would not fly now, at least I hope not. Still happens, I'm sure. But it's just the movie kind of undermines a traditional kind of genre, and that's why I've called it a chimera, because you don't really quite know where it fits. It's not really a horror film. It's not really a thriller. It's not really a comedy. What the hell is it? When this movie came out, I'm telling you, people had no idea how to react. And because they didn't know, all they could do is look at Nicolas Cage's performance, and it was just over the top, beyond over the top.
Well, I'm just wondering how they marketed this film, because, like I said before, it's not a comedy, it's not a horror film, you know? Like, what do you do, you know? Like, how do you explain what you're about to see, and except for, like making it sound like it's a crazy freaking movie, you know?
Right. Well, and I think that's why later critics have latched onto the idea of this being a black comedy. It's sort of like the last thing you can sort of say about it. And there are elements of that in there. I just don't know that explains the whole purpose of the film, which is why I would love to have gotten a copy with comments or commentary from the director, because he and the writer are the only ones who are, I think it's James Minion, mm-hmm. They're the only ones who could really tell us exactly what's going on. And even if they did, you have to wonder if this is an example of an actor with a massive ego who is just kidnapping the film and saying, you know, I'm going to take it in this direction. You know, you guys might be thinking you're going to do a movie like this, but I'm acting like that and just completely taking over the movie. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's when you fire the actor.
But can you do that, though? I mean, contractually, you can't always do that. That's one of the things.
Sure.
And, you know, after Raising Arizona, Nicolas Cage was kind of riding high. So, and he's the star, definitely, of this film.
Yeah. Like, no doubt. Like, he's the best. But like you had said earlier, he's pretty much what you're watching when you just to see what he's going to do next. So pretty much all eyes are always on him when, you know, he's around in the scene.
Right. And we all know Nicolas Cage. I mean, he's an amazing actor in that when he's on, he clearly gives an Oscar-winning performance. I mean, he's done that. On the other hand, there are times when he's not on, and it's just insane. It's just, you know, he goes nuts.
Yeah.
And I think this is the first film, in my opinion, that I remember seeing where he just spins out of control. He gives the appearance of spinning out of control. I won't say that it was not worthy of it. I think he does the character well. I just think it's a little much.
I think he does it a little bit too well. It's honestly hard for me to separate Nick Cage from this character.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that can be problematic in and of itself, because, you know, like I say, you stop paying attention to the plot of the film and you start paying attention to,
like,
Nicolas Cage.
What
are you
doing?
Right.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree. Whenever I saw him on the screen, I was just, like, enthralled into what, he, you know, what is he going to do, or what is he going to say? Because you never knew what was going to come, what was going to happen. And, I mean, they kind of made you on the edge of your seat.
Sure.
You know? I think it's like a case where the actor and the character just go together a little bit too well.
Are you saying that maybe Nicolas Cage actually thinks he's a vampire?
No. I'm saying maybe he's a method actor. I think that when he's like 80 and retired, maybe that's what he's going to be like.
Oh, when he's senile, he's going to go around, I was a vampire once.
I mean, yeah. We have seen some very egocentric performances in Indie Film Cafe. You know, Neil Breen is known for doing that as well. But this was very different than Neil Breen, don't you think?
I mean, better acting.
Sure.
I mean, even if it's over the top acting, you know, like it's better acting than a lot of what people can do.
Yeah, Neil Breen seemed like he was more promoting himself. It's all about me. It's all about me. Whereas this one, it's about the character.
Right.
It wasn't
about the actor or the filmmaker.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. So yeah, in a way. It's a different thing, but I can see some similarities in that as well. It's very curious. You have to wonder. I would love to listen to some of his co-actors in this production. What did Maria Conchita Alonso think when she went through this film?
Yeah.
You know, how do you act, you know, opposite? I mean, Jonathan, you're an actor.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle someone like this who's clearly, their character is mushrooming out of control almost.
Well, here's the thing. When you deal with as a director, when you deal with somebody who either is not listening to you, usually you can fire them, right? But when they're the star, you're fired, you know, pretty much if you can't see eye to eye. So either you have to kind of just agree with what they're doing, or you have to kind of do that. But Lenore found a really interesting idea to go with that director talking to Nicolas Cage. I'm going to let her take over right now and talk about that real quick.
I like her theory about the rabies thing.
Yeah.
So it turns out Nicolas Cage actually ate the cockroach in that scene.
Ew.
Except he didn't just eat one because the director asked for 3 takes of them. So he ate 3 cockroaches. The director liked the first take and was planning to use it. He just didn't like Nicolas Cage, so he made him eat 2 more cockroaches.
Some of the things early on that were described as sort of weird,
mm-hmm.
like eating the cockroach, for example,
mm-hmm.
that was more calculated from what I understand.
Sure.
Like you were doing that for effect.
I was trying to get on the map. I started at 15 and I was trying to make a big noise like punk rock and say, look at me, I'm here, you know, and I want you to remember me. And that was how I did it.
You know,
I heard stories about Ozzy Osbourne and all that, and I thought, wow, that's wild. But when I did Vampire's Kiss, it was my idea.
To eat the cockroach.
Yeah, and the director and I, we were knocking heads a little bit, so he made me do it twice. But I can tell you it was the most disgusting, horrible memory I have of any experience on a movie set. And
But
we're still talking about it, and the irony, again, I like that word today, is now you have these things, or had these things like Fear Factor, and everyone's doing it, and it created such a gasp in the audience.
Oh my God, that's horrible. But you know, it's funny that like that happened, because like I could just see that situation, and it's just, you know, because a director has an ego in a way because they want what they want, right?
Right.
And an actor has an ego because they want their performance to be whatever. So with them clashing like that would make a very awkward set, you know.
Yeah, there's another thing too, is that those weren't just normal cockroaches. They were bred and trained.
Oh my goodness.
So the trainer was not happy.
No.
That was a collective groan when he ate that cockroach. Mm. We all went, oh.
I think I tried to cover my eyes, then I still wanted to see it.
Well, it was one of those, no, wait, he's gonna do it.
He's going. And
you
see
your fingers.
All the little legs are skittering.
Yeah, he actually ate it. That was the cockroach's actual reaction to being eaten.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
Okay, we're back.
Oh, cool. So I also have to remember that these scenes weren't filmed in the way that we're seeing them. And I really wonder if we saw them in in the order where they were filmed, we might see like a timeline of like tension building up between the actor and the director.
Mm. That would be interesting.
Yeah, that definitely would be interesting.
Like, we might see like the breakdown of his production.
I mean, it's curious to be able to see some of this stuff. Now, Jen, you found some interesting bits.
His total break with reality, and he's walking through the city. This is before he meets Sharon. He's walking down and he's talking to himself and he's disheveled and he has blood on him and he's carrying a giant steak.
Mm-hmm.
That was filmed in New York City from, what's the exact terminology here, excuse me, long lens from a distance. So everybody walking around has no clue what's going on. So the couple he runs into and says, I'm a vampire.
I'm a vampire.
They weren't part of the movie. Their reactions are genuine.
I was wondering, how did they get so many actors to do this?
That's awesome.
Yeah, they were. Those were not
actors. I'm a vampire. Oh my goodness.
So crazy. He is.
Yeah. One of them, I bet she was talking to their kids about this, and they're like, you know, I met Nicolas Cage once, and he was insane. Kept talking about how he was a vampire.
So funny. Oh,
and then if they ever got a chance to watch this movie, they'd be like, now that makes sense.
My goodness.
We need to find one of those people. Just interview them.
Yeah. Wow. It's just, you know, I'm just amazed. Like I said, I hadn't seen this movie in at least 20 years. It's been a long time. I mean, I remember Nicolas Cage and his you know, performance. I just didn't remember how strong it was and how dominating it was and how just batshit crazy it was.
There you go. That's the words for it.
It's batshit crazy.
So, yeah, I kind of really wanted you to see this because of that.
Oh, thank you.
Can we talk about his facial expressions for a second?
Goodness.
Those are like the best facial, because I see memes with his.
Those are like all the memes of
the
him.
Big, giant eyeballs.
And I'm going, yeah, you know, like him looking like insane, but yeah, they're pretty much all the same. Because I think we noticed it like 3 or 4 times, just going, I know that, I've seen that before, you know, but I didn't know that it was from this movie.
So basically, if it's a picture of Nicolas Cage in a suit with big eyeballs, it's from this movie.
Yes, big eyeballs.
And he's clearly, in my opinion, sort of channeling Max Schreck from Nosferatu, because he gets all stiff and hunched over, and his hands are like claw-shaped, and, you know,
especially in the club.
Yeah, especially in the club. And it's so funny because he gets away with it at first and he actually like is hitting on this chick and we're all thinking, oh my God, she's going to like just slap him and move on. But it wasn't until she was like grabbing her that she finally, I mean, she was okay with it at first. It was really strange.
Well, it's 80s, New York City, some weird guy hitting on you in a club. It's, yeah, why not?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, so... it's such a strange, strange film, so...
Yeah, I want to say thank you, but I'm not.
Something different, right?
Yeah, true.
Because I had thought about the skeezy old lady movie, but we had done that one already, but we'll do that.
Thank you.
But, so, Lenore, what did you think?
It was a movie.
I mean, compared to other films you've seen for us here on Indie Film Cafe.
It's probably one of the better made and better shot and better acted films. Better overall, but I'm left very disquieted by this movie in a way that's hard to describe.
It's similar to, say, the way you felt disquieted when you watched Forbidden Zone?
No, that was a bit more distinct feeling.
Okay.
This is just a very over-the-top performance. It's just over-the-top.
Okay, fair enough. All right, what about you, Miss Yolanda?
First, I made the mistake of Googling Nicolas Cage memes, and,
Plenty of those.
I'm glad I saw it, but I don't particularly like me, if that makes sense. Like,
sure.
I liked the other movie I saw because it was, like, ridiculous in a way that made you laugh. This, I just don't know what I'm looking at, you know?
Right. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I had just this reaction, but I thought it was funny until a point where it no longer was funny to me anymore.
Yeah.
I felt sorry for him towards the end. I really did.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you're acting crazy. Okay, now reality's coming in, and now he's going to die. You know,
I could argue with that, because he did rape and murder somebody, and he knew he did it. And it's not like he thought, oh, I dreamt it or something. He actually knew he murdered and raped somebody. So in the end, he's kind of a horrible person because, like, he's kind of accepting these things, and yet he's kind of just like, eh, okay, well, my psychiatrist, who is imaginary right now, which I guess he didn't know, obviously, but is telling me it's okay. So I'm, you know, I'm good. You know, like, nobody does that, you know?
Yeah. So what were you going to say?
I was actually wondering a little bit about that. We didn't actually see him do anything to Alva except, like, take off her shirt and bite her, right? So I was actually wondering, did he actually rape her, or did he just think he did?
I was wondering that, too, because, I mean, they're not going to show her more disheveled, but he had his jacket undone and his tie askew, but that was it.
Right.
You know,
we
so...
We don't actually know what she told her brother.
Yeah, and just being attacked like that is enough to cause her reaction. Yeah.
Right.
You know, and to make the brother angry.
So maybe he didn't actually rape her.
And, you know,
that's what I was kind of wondering,
too. He keeps talking to the imaginary or not psychiatrist about finding love, and I just haven't found the right one. And you have to wonder if his obsession with Alva is wrapped up in all this, too, and that maybe he's, like, lusting after her and has no way to sort of logically approach that, and that's part of his psychosis and, you know, part of his obsession with her. And, you know, I mean, I just remember back when I was a little kid and I was, you know, obsessed with a particular girl, and I didn't know what the hell to do about it because I'm a dumbass kid. So I would pull her hair, or I would just annoy her, or I would just do something stupid. Pay attention to me, because, you know, you're a dumbass kid. You just don't know. You know what I mean? So
he's never progressed beyond that.
You know, he still pulls people's hair.
I don't do that. I might squeak a stuffed animal in someone's face on occasion. I will admit that happens, as you do.
Yeah.
But whether it's a cow or a chicken.
Yeah, but we do know that he did actually murder that girl.
Yes.
Yeah, that was... He actually did a good job about, like, leaving us wondering, but then actually showing us the scenery, what happened.
And I guess part of the black comedy of that is that we see him biting her, and then at the very end, you see that he wasn't actually using the teeth. He couldn't do it with the teeth,
so
he had to use his
own. Plastic vampire teeth, yeah.
The terrible plastic cheap vampire teeth.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a shame.
No, I mean, and yeah, he couldn't even bite her with that, so he had to actually bite her with his... regular teeth, and just, that just was sad.
Yeah.
He would have probably been caught pretty easily.
Yeah, that was like they were very much in the open.
That, and Mata, you're the forensics person?
Yes.
Would there be DNA in a bite wound?
Yes.
Would they be able to find that in the 80s?
In the 80s, no.
Oh, never mind.
No, PCR had just, like, depending where this was made, PCR had just recently been invented. So it probably was not advanced enough for them to be able to find DNA and saliva.
However, what they did have is dentistry. So if he did bite her with his real teeth, they could have matched the marks on her neck with his dentistry.
True.
With his teeth.
And the fact that he walked out covered in blood.
Yeah.
Right. And in front of everybody. I mean,
and multiple people heard him shout, "I'm a vampire.
I'm a vampire."
Yeah.
I'm amazed, like, everybody just, like, lets him, oh, ho, ho, you're a vampire. I'm like, dude, he's covered with blood.
And that's funny, because that's also a reflection of New York City, you know? Because how many times have we heard about people getting murdered in the streets, people getting raped in the streets, horrible things happening in New York City, and nobody does anything. Everybody ignores it. It's the same thing here. You know, he's being a menace in the street, and people are just like, get away, you crazy person.
Yeah, there's a movie that I saw, I think it was Last Action Hero with Arnold Schwarzenegger, but there's a part where a guy shoots a guy in the middle of the street, right? He goes, I just shot a man in, you know, the middle of the street. And somebody goes, hey, shut up down there, I'm trying to sleep.
Right.
You know, like, it's just like, that's just New York for you. Like, they don't...
After hours.
You know, after hours. So...
It must be a little bit real life case where a woman had been stabbed, and there were like 20 onlookers. A woman had been stabbed, and nobody called the cops because they thought it was an art performance.
Oh, dear.
By the time they realized, it was too late to save her.
Sheesh.
Was it two mimes?
Yeah.
One slapping and one spitting.
That was weird.
Yeah.
You think?
Mine's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So very.
Else, the
very strange film.
It was weird.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a relic of the late 80s, too. Certainly the music and the dressing, the way they dressed and everything. And it was just bizarre. What?
Were those mimes actors, or were they actually on the street and from real life?
Ooh.
Good question.
Good
I have
one.
No idea.
How the camera been focusing on them, I think they're actors.
Mm. I would hope so, but maybe not.
You know, I mean, at this point.
Random street performers they found, like, hey, guys, want to be in a
at
movie?
At this point, I have no idea who in the streets was real and who was just an actor. You know, it's the movie messing with our heads again.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. The movie does fuck with your head just the
same
as the actual movie itself fucks with your leg. You know, watching the movie, you're just like, wait, what's real, what's not? You know?
It's like you walk away from the movie thinking you know what's going on. And then in the couple of minutes after, I guess, you leave the theater, the questions start forming in your brain.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Definitely poses a lot of questions. And then, like, the whole thing with the contract. It's just so weird how he obsesses over this thing. And then clearly the client doesn't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, he calls him on the phone and says, oh, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it. I don't care. And he just ignores that. And then finally, you know, he makes her go through all of these contracts for days. She finally founds it. And when she gives it to him, he's like, it's too late. And it's like, what do you mean it's too late?
Oh, he was talking about the vampirism, I think.
You think so?
Transformed.
Yeah.
Mm. Maybe. But the thing that makes me wonder now is that scene after he aggressively tries to attack Alva in the restroom and everything. We'll get to that, I guess, in a second. But afterwards, he's with the people in the boardroom. Are they real? We never see them again. I don't even know if they're real.
One of them was in the bathroom crapping. Remember, he was like, "Oh, I'm taking a crap here. Get out of here."
I don't know if that was whatever. But what I know, what I was wondering when I was watching it afterwards, I was going, "Wait a minute, were those people actually real?" Because their conversation just seemed way too like they're laughing at the whole situation way too much.
Yeah, that time,
it could have been, but it could have also been.
Right. So basically what we have here is an example of a literary vice called the unreliable narrator, where we're seeing things from their point of view, but we can't really, judge what's real and what's not real. Mm-hmm. We can't rely on them because we don't know that they have a perfect grasp on reality. You know? And that's a difficult thing. It's a difficult device to read stuff from. It's much more difficult, in my opinion, to do that in film, which is why I don't think it's used very often.
Right.
You know, very tough.
Definitely. I agree. It was a, but I do want to go back to that, when she goes into the bathroom and he follows her in there.
He doesn't follow her. He chases after her. She hides in the bathroom.
That's true. She's trying to get away from him.
Clarify this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he goes in there, and then there's a woman in there.
An old woman
that's just like, what are you doing? And then she walks away. She doesn't call for help. She doesn't, hit the guy or tell him to. She kind of tells him to leave, I guess, but very briefly. But
I know, it's just.
I'm getting the impression that the other employees thought this was normal for him.
Yeah.
Either that or it's very New York City where everybody's on their own. You got to protect yourself and that's it. Nobody's helping you out.
I still think a great portion of it is the corporate culture of the time.
Sure.
Yeah, true.
It was men can act crazy, and you notice all the secretaries are women. And when the author, whoever it is that he has to find the contract for, calls in, he's talking about your ladies. Oh, don't have your ladies work too hard on this, or whatever he says exactly. But
yeah.
Right there,
which is why I think the board doesn't. That could be totally wrong.
They're only around to do the crap work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it could be mixed up too. I think some of these people actually did exist, but I think he might be twisting his perception of it.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's taking what they say and he is making it an extreme version in his mind to tell himself what I'm doing is okay.
Sure, and that could very well be what's going on with the therapist if there really is a therapist.
Yeah.
Clearly the therapist transitions into something very different towards the end where she's become this weird matchmaker with Sharon? Where did this person come from?
Okay, exactly. So I have this theory that the therapist is there because he did go into a conversation on the phone and on the payphone with her she was with some guy, you know, which I don't think would be in his imagination that she was with some guy.
Right.
So I think that maybe there was a therapist. That she was scheduled for Monday to whatever. Sunday, he has his mental breakdown because remember, everybody's going into church and he's having this like kind of breakdown. He's yelling he's a vampire to people on the street and shit. And then he has that, he thinks it's Monday, you know, or whatever. And he just has this thought in his head about the therapist and all I need is love or whatever. And that's going to fix it. And that was all because of Alva and all the other women in his life and stuff like that. It's just like it all kind of adds up to that one last, like, you know, thing.
See, I found that kind of jarring because there's nothing in it in the movie beforehand
that indicates that he might be feeling that way
or that he's looking for love. I mean, he goes home with these women, he sleeps with them, he does the whole jerk guy thing, but there's no hint that he really wants to fall in love. And then all at the very end, like,
actually, there is a hint. I will disagree. Well, there is also the fact that he was God, I had it a second ago. I just lost my train of thought. But he actually was looking for love because every time that he had a woman with him, the next day he would talk to them and there would be invisible people. They were just as
He was like inviting them into his shower. And
but they weren't there. So he was actually really looking for love, but these women left before he woke up, you know, or whatever.
It's kind of in a fugue state because he's going in and out of reality, and we don't really pick up in this until the point where he's just out of reality completely.
Right.
And that's when he has the complete change with the therapist, because clearly she's not going to be saying any of the crap that she says later on, you know.
Not to mention that.
Right, right, right. But the funniest thing to me isn't so much that he creates his own perfect love who knows everything about him, and then, you know, she follows him back and he starts hating her too. They start arguing. It's just so funny. He's like, on a dime, he just switches over and says, "Will you shut up and leave me alone?"
Yeah, he argues with his imaginary people too. Jeez.
His perfect love.
His perfect love, he can't find perfection.
With the shower, was there a bat in the shower?
I don't know what happened. I think the bat came in, bit him, and left. I really do. You know, I it's hard to tell. We never see the bat again.
I want to say the rabies thing was a good idea and stuff, and maybe that's kind of made his hallucinations and his sanity kind of transpire more, and, you know.
I was thinking, especially if he's already talking to a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
He may already...
Right.
And on the way to that.
The bite on his neck was probably just a bite from the damn bat. Even though bats don't really do that, I mean, you know.
Maybe it's just a hickey.
Yeah, it could have been just a hickey from the lady. But he actually did meet her because he does say he, you know, Rachel. But then
I remember and she's like, yeah, you're Peter.
And your comment about maybe Rachel was just into some kinky shit is also well taken because that's possible too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot to be like questioned and wondered, you know, and there's no answers.
And clearly, he's not even seeing what reality is for what it is, because, you know, he knows vampires are supposed to be afraid of the sun, but he doesn't understand why, and the sun's not actually doing anything to him. Same thing with the crosses. He reacts to crosses because he sees that's what they're supposed to do on TV, but it doesn't really hurt him.
Yeah.
You know, he's supposed to be a vampire, therefore he's supposed to have fangs, but he's checking his teeth and he doesn't have any, so he has to buy cheap plastic ones to fit in with this delusion that he's got because he's not really a vampire.
And the mirrors.
Breaking all the mirrors on purpose.
We see that he can actually, he does have a reflection, but he, in his mind, starts seeing that he doesn't have one. Like, where did I go?
And I love the homemade coffin that he designs himself out of the couch that he, you know, he turns over and it's part of it's on a stack of books and he sleeps under it on a bunch of pillows. It's just, it's, you know, in a way, it's like I said, it's kind of sad that he's just obsessed with this weird delusion. You know, maybe it's because of rabies. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's rabies acting on somebody who is delusional and the two of them together.
Maybe already had a...
Yeah. So it's difficult. It's not an easy, straightforward film. And, you know, normally I love that sort of thing. It's just that at the same time, Nicolas Cage's performance kind of drowns everything else out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Although, I think the victims of this movie are more Alva and that woman he murders. Not so, well, he is too. But the bigger victims are Alva and the woman
sure.
who got murdered.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And perhaps the psychiatrist if she didn't get paid anymore.
Now, I would love to interview that director and find out if there was any, like, if this was actually, like, any of our thoughts or whatever. So if we could find him, I'd love to tag him in this thing.
Or the writer, at the very least.
Oh, the writer, too, yeah, because he would, well, I don't know. I almost feel like this movie might have been written, but, like, a lot of it feels like it could have been improvised or like, changed a little bit.
It's an interesting point, because I know you can get on the internet a lot of scripts of different films. I wonder if you can get a script version of this, if you have to buy it or something. I'd love to see it and
sounds like a good challenge for you.
I know. I'd love this to get it just to see how much they kept to the script, because you got to wonder, too, if some of that was improv. I definitely got kind of an improv feel off some of that. Like, that whole thing where he's like, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Oh, and he does the whole alphabet. That was a great scene.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that clip on YouTube of, what's his name? That actor who plays Qui-Gon Jinn.
I'm not sure.
Liam Neeson.
Oh, Liam Neeson
dramatically counted to 20 in the style of the count from Sesame Street. That's what reminded me of.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh.
I've never seen that.
Now I have to see that.
I know.
Right.
I even asked you if freaking Nicolas Cage was going to do the whole alphabet. And you go, yep. And I was like, oh my God, please don't. And he just did. Like, he did the whole thing and she wasn't stopping him from doing it.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, how are you going to stop him?
Yeah. She had the look on her face like I would, like, okay. This, I mean, yeah. Finish.
Yeah. She was like, congratulations, you know the whole alphabet.
I love that.
I know, it's great.
I love that.
And then that scene where he just berates the hell out of poor Alvin. He's like, you have to do it. This is the worst job in the world. And I wouldn't give anybody who is here 1 minute longer for someone to help you, because you deserve it. You have to do it or I'll fire you. What do you think about that, Alva?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he had some messed up power fantasies, because he was staring at her even before the whole bite thing happened.
I know. Mm-hmm. It was very strange.
Mm-hmm. Poor Alva.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. I think we've reached the point where we have to sort of give our scores to this film. Good luck with that. That's tough. But just to catch everybody up so that we're all on the same page, we have something called a stinkometer.
Stinkometer!
In which we give a score from 1 to 10 based on how stinky we think this film is, where a 1 represents just a little bit of stink and a 10 is maximum stinkometer.
Stinkage.
Right, and then a 5 is kind of in between, and if you feel like being subtle and giving it a half step, like a 5.5, you're perfectly free to do that. So I'm going to go ahead and say that the official scores for this film are Mr. Moody, myself, and just Jen, because we were saving this one for you, but we are also going to get scores from you two as well. So I'm gonna let our guests go ahead and score first.
Oh, evil.
Evil.
I have no idea what score to give this.
It's well made. It's well shot. It's well acted. It's good.
But.
Everything. But.
But. It's so bizarre.
Story. I'd argue that because it's professionally made, it's actually worse than it would have been for an amateur film. I'm gonna go 10 out of 10.
What?
Wow.
You gave it maximum stinkage?
Wow.
She does make a good point.
I agree. I'm just like surprised. I'm shocked.
Right.
This is my first podcast. I don't know the conventions here.
Yeah, you have that. Trust me. I gave a less score to the first movie that we did this year because I thought we were going to get worse later. And so far, it's been the worst that we've done so far.
Stick around, kid. I got plenty of tens out there, trust me.
You've never watched Acting in Max.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I just maybe I'll go like a 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That seems good.
A bit harsh, but okay.
Okay, Mr. Moody, what about you?
Oh, I'm not a guest. I thought you were going to get Lenore's next.
Yeah.
She's not quite sure.
Yeah. She's thinking. My rating for now is X until I decide.
Okay. What about you, Jen?
I'm gonna give it a 3. Wow, that's low. Because it was, well, basing it off of the other crap I've seen. Yeah, because it was well made, and you had decent actor, well, good actors. You had, you know, the good production, all of that kind of stuff. And I feel like the story could have been better if it was done differently. I didn't think it was that bad. It just wasn't good.
Right, right.
I didn't necessarily think it was stinky.
Okay.
It just wasn't a good movie.
Fair enough. That's kind of how I was thinking. I gave it a little higher score, though. I personally am giving it a 5.5.
Oh.
Not quite middle, a little bit stinkier than the middle, but not terrifically bad because, like you said, all the production values are spot on. You know, if you can somehow remove Nicolas Cage from the group and you look at everybody else's performances, acting performance is really good. Maria Cachito Alonso was excellent. She was so good in this movie. She seemed just so vulnerable, and you felt so bad for her character.
Yeah.
I just think that she really, really did a good job. And as far as the direction goes, in spite of the fact that I had no idea sometimes what was real and what wasn't, I got to hand it to the director. That was pretty darn well done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as Nicolas Cage's performance, though, he kind of sort of nudges it back towards the stinkier side of things. So.
Mm-hmm.
5.5 to me seems like a fair enough score.
Real quick question for you.
Sure.
Real quick question for you. Sorry, just a second. if Nicolas Cage, think about this. If he didn't have that horrific accent that came and go, if he just did a normal voice, do you think his performance would have been better?
I would have knocked it down to say a 5 or 4.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know because the reason I don't know about that mm-hmm. is because if he had done it, I think the movie would have suffered because I feel like him doing that terrible accent the whole time kind of went with a character, and if he just played it normal, this movie wouldn't have been able to pull off all the stuff.
See, I go the opposite way.
I have to think I agree. I think his accent is kind of part of his character because he has no idea who the hell he is. He really doesn't.
Well, and see, that's what gets me. I would have given it a better, would have been considered a better movie if he used a normal voice, not a funky accent, because then, to me, that sounds more realistic. And when he does that break with reality completely,
I will agree that it is annoying.
Fucking annoying.
I could tell it was burning
me. Oh, it was killing me. Sorry. I want to interrupt with that. I just thought of that question when you were talking about
that.
So we've
got so far 3 from you,
Solid
5.5 from me. Did you change your score?
Yeah, I changed mine to a 6.
Okay, you changed yours to a 6. Mr. Moody.
All right, I'm going to go with 5. When I was like thinking about it throughout the whole movie, I was going 9. This is a 9. This is a fucking 9. Then I started a 999, like Hitler. But the more I thought about it, the more we talked about it,
mm-hmm.
it dropped.
Right.
It kept dropping because it is a think piece. As much as I don't want it to be, because I don't know if I'll ever watch this movie again or not, unless I want to torture somebody with it.
You are Paul's friend.
Yeah, I know, so I might. it's one of those films that I feel like people can talk about, people can you know, somewhat relate to in times. Like, they know somebody who's freaking nuts, you know? You know what I mean? Like, there's these things
I'm a vampire.
You can see people like
cow.
This. Yeah, there you go. Vampire cow. Cowpire.
No.
Cowpire.
Don't. No ideas. Not give him ideas.
But I feel like that's
okay.
The thing. So
five.
I'm a 5. Lenore, do you have this score yet?
I think I'm going to score it in 2 parts. The movie outside of Nicolas Cage gets a 1.
Mm-hmm.
Nicolas Cage's performance gets a 9.
Average the 2.
It gets a 5.
5.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, there you go.
So not too bad. It's funny, you know, a lot of different people had a lot of different reactions to this.
Yeah. If anyone's interested, the average score we gave it was a 4.9.
There you go. There you go.
It is one of those films that I think it's not that stinky of a movie. Like, it's not, you know, it's no Actium Maximus, but it's also no, like, Hey, Stop Stabbing Me, or one of those other ones that were just goofy but fun, kind of knew what it was doing. This movie almost doesn't know what it's doing. It's just, right. But it's fun. It's enjoyable.
It somehow works, and most of the stink really comes from Nicolas Cage. Even though I don't think he's a bad actor, I think he does kind of go over the top in this, whether the character deserved it or not. And it's to the point where it kind of hampers the film because you really don't know how to approach it. You don't know. You know.
I could explain a little bit why I keep wavering with the scores a little bit.
Yeah.
So there you go.
4.9, I guess.
So you got to admit, guys, this is a bit of a different pick than some of the movies I've been bringing you guys, right?
Yeah, way different. I was not expecting it.
Okay.
He was telling me the whole time. He was so excited to get you to watch this. I don't know.
I just, because I figured you were expecting something really horrible and schlocky. Yeah. And it kind of is, but not in the same way, some of the other ones.
Well, and this is more, I like some of these weird, thinky movies. Right. Not too deep, but like, I love 12 Monkeys.
There you go.
I love Brazil.
Yes.
You know.
Really?
I love Brazil too.
Yes, I do.
Not a fan.
I saw the face. Yeah. I know, but that's why I'm like, okay, I'm good with this. And that's why I think his performance annoyed me so, that accent annoyed me so much. And I felt like it would have been better
and
without
I hear
it.
You. I like films that take a chance, that take a risk. I like performances that take a risk. This performance might have gone a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
However, bravo for the filmmakers who made this. Bravo to Nicolas Cage for putting it out there like this. Wow. How strong or how brave of an actor do you have to be to do a performance like that?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I think we're just subtly dragging Nick Cage right now.
A little bit, but it's not like the man doesn't have a history of over-the-top performances.
I know.
And good ones.
Yeah, some really great ones. But at this, I think this is actually a pretty good performance. It's just, you know, maybe his accent was bad, but like I think I felt like that was the character, and I felt like that worked for him. I think if he had like lost the accent or something, he wasn't really doing the accent, I think it would have I feel like that wouldn't have made the movie, you know,
I mean,
as enjoyable.
Today we look at Nick doing the gigantic eyes and thing and character and everything, and we're laughing. It's hysterical. But I can tell you, having seen it in the theater at the time, people were like, "What the hell's going on?" They were confused.
Well, you said this is the first time he did that, so like nobody
expected it.
Right.
Yeah, nobody was expecting it, and then now people kind of like, you know, it's like Gary Busey.
Right.
You know,
and that's why I kind of talked about the difference between, say, the Gen X film critics and the modern film critics. The context of this film is very different now.
Mm-hmm. People enjoy really bad movies now. Back in the 80s, there wasn't even the MedVed stuff, was there?
Like, that was about it. There wasn't much else.
There was like
Joe
the Golden Turkey Awards and stuff. There wasn't really much going on. Nowadays, it's celebrated with riff tracks and other
stuff.
Know
what? I like that too, because let's face it, Hollywood has been giving us, you know, a lot of cookie cutter movies, and you get a lot of cookie cutter performances. This is anything but. You know? Anything but.
I would agree.
And most people who are going to see this, I think, are going to get a kick out of it.
I think because we get so many unintentionally bad movies, we look for movies that are deliberately bad so we can laugh at it and feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's what he does. That's his thing.
That's right. Some people do drugs, some people do booze. I do crappy, stinky, awful, terrible films.
Yes. There you go. That's his booze and crack.
Everybody. There you go. Oh, my geez. Booze and crack.
Yeah.
As a side note, I love Velocipaster. I'm going to show that to all my friends.
Outstanding.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of Indie Film Cafe. So to give you guys a heads up, Jin will be back for our last episode of the season. So we're so excited to have you back. Come back here.
Yay. And thanks for coming.
He's got something planned for you. Again.
Oh, I always do.
Yes. I just keep letting him do it because, you know what? You always know you're in for something
you're
fun.
You're in for something. We'll leave it at that. Something. Yeah.
So.
And we want to thank the Miller twins here.
Yes. Thank you too.
Bye.
for coming on the show. That was awesome.
And for letting me torment you with a weird movie.
Well, I think they enjoyed it. I think this one they enjoyed.
This one.
Well, there's a couple I think that they weren't as big of fans of, but, you know, this one is kind of a fun little goofy movie. Okay, so just so everybody knows, right now we're working on a movie called My Girl from the Serial Killer that we're raising funds for.
Yep.
If you guys can, we're going to have the Indiegogo on the bottom of the thing here, so you can check that out. Also, Patreon.
Yes.
So help us by donating a dollar.
We need moolah.
Yes, because this isn't cheap. Nope. So it would be great if you guys could help us. We're going to do more stuff with the Patreon, we promise. We're going to do some like secret little podcasts and stuff.
Secret reviews, movie reviews that only Patreon people can see.
Yeah, so you guys, and you can pick what crappy, stinky movie you want us to do.
Absolutely.
But you have to be a Patreon member to do it.
There you go.
Donate a dollar at least, and you can do that. Like, we'll just donate a dollar, and you can pick a crappy movie for us. So.
Or a movie you think is crappy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Or maybe we'll like it. I don't know.
He
likes crappy movies, so. More than I do. So, there you go.
But all right, guys.
Mm-hmm. And check out indiefilmcafe.reviews. For our website. Also check out Indie Film Cafe on at Indie Film Cafe at was it Twitter, Facebook and
Facebook,
Instagram. Yep. Instagram I don't use as much. I need to start doing that some.
But we're also on Podbean, we are on Stitcher, we are on Radio Public.
You realize how many
iTunes
podcasts we do, Jen?
Yeah, we're kind of like
seven or eight of them. I know, we kind of don't have, like, an intern. We need a new intern.
We do.
An intern.
We had one. Yeah. You know, no longer with us.
We had a social media intern, but...
Mm, you know, we'll probably get another one.
Yeah.
So if you want to be a social media intern for Indie Film Cafe, contact us at indiefilmcafe@gmail.com. We would love to have you. And it's, you know, all you got to do is just help us do all the stuff that we can't always do.
Yeah, we'd appreciate it. All right, guys, we will catch you on the next episode. Until then,
have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.